Your ATM is safe, your banks are safe, there's enough cash in the financial system, and there is an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve,
Then I would sell my Bitcoin right into this rally. And believe me, I have been a believer one time in Bitcoin. Not here, not now. Find somebody to love, don't you?
On this trend has been margin called.
Think it was a hook, trusting your idols, now they got you shook. Believe in the crooks, hell of the same. Are they cooking the books? Save up a decade, now lost in a day. Another new gun rush is getting away. Bigger the bank, bigger ripple effect. When it all blows off, it is you who will pay.
Behind the ass, inside the success. Pull back the curtains and what do you get? And it's the risk with a big tippy net. Made from your savings and 401k. Give it to the other side of the trade. Socialize lessons while we've been the game. First to fall in this reckless war. Cause it's just a pawn in the control of this game.
Money talks and pay for the show. Pay for the crowd, pay for the thrill, pay for the media to lie to our face. Talk the truth so we repeat our mistakes. Sell us the dream but never deliver. What we're here. Fees, including the tickets, siphoning funds from the mouthless biggest, blindly the blind to the all complicit. Money is cheap and addicted to growth. Commingle the risks so nobody knows. The fire of a gun to the damaged collateral, another excuse for oppressive control. When government capture was private play, reapers are bailing at the end of the day. We're calling for help, but nobody came. Don't bail us for pawns and complainants.
Money deeply rots at the core. Don't believe intentions are pure. This crypto contagion stems from a system that incentivized fraud. As schemes get more complex, and fallible humans left unchecked. Playing the dark is how you get wrecked, and our economies are largely dead.
What would happen if we take our money out of its systems? Why protest our labor when we can pull out our capital? Where would we be if our money enriched us? Still think our holding purpose and power. How do we build a base? Replace the control and defense with the will of free markets.
Give an independent system to remove the risk of corruption.
Step two.
Move the savings into their system so no one can ever touch it.
Step three.
Earn, save, spend, trade. All activities moving this way. We know our money. Everything changed. We no longer positive to the
other day. Tired of our desire, earning our way. And tired of earning the logic. He's a pie for everyone who wants to be on fire. Money is down on the curve when we win. That's what you score to politicians. Come and capture it out of the place and we reap the value at the end of the day.
So we can move value without being censored. Move up from gambling and saving. Move up from all the politics. Move on to the end of the internet.
So we don't have the trust to be what they say. So freedom and money can be taken away.
So we treat and punish all the same.
So we can get the control of this game.
Knowing the truth will break the frame. Now our perspectives forever change. Truth is the key for us to reclaim.
Open the door, it's the game.
Good morning, everybody, and I hope you had a fantastic Monday afternoon slash evening. My name is Coleman, and this is episode 73 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces, and I want to say good morning to everybody who's tuning in out there. I see we have Chip, Patrick, Beached Whale, BitCat, Powerlifter, Death and Bitcoin, Ace, Gen X BC, LBN, and we have Jordan on the Operation Libertas handle, Bob Van Kirk, and Mike and Wade on the Bitcoin Alaska. Good morning, gentlemen. How is your evening?
Good morning, Coleman. Great, as usual.
Morning, everybody. I don't think I was on at all last week, just doing Thanksgiving stuff. So it's good to see everybody again, or hear everybody again.
Good morning, guys. My evening was explicitly nice because the early half of the week is my weekend. So I was relaxing and not doing anything, just as a weekend should be spent.
Oh, that's awesome. And I'm glad you're up here, Mike. It's very, I have a hard time getting you up here. just because of your work schedule. So it's nice to see you up here and contributing. Definitely want to pick your brain a little bit. You're going to be my intel guy today with some of the events happening in South Korea that just kind of happened over the last hour or so. So I want to dive into that. But before we kick off the show, I want to make sure every single person understands the importance of why we do this every day, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. And that's to show the world what Bitcoin can do. And again, and Bitcoiners, I think we like to try and rush this too much. We try and think that we have to move that mountain by ourselves and we have to do everything and we have to make big gargantuan moves. But remember, it starts with just a small pebble. So get out there and talk to your local businesses. Go out there and talk to your friends and your families and just show them the power and the potential of what Bitcoin can do and how they can get off this fiat hamster wheel. It's the holidays right now, and I hope everyone had a fantastic Thanksgiving with their friends and family. And if Bitcoin was brought up, that's great. If not, there's still plenty of time to bring it up at different events. But I'm sure everyone can relate right now with the stress of affording, you know, Christmas gifts, you know, holiday foods. You know, it can be a depressing time for people if you're just barely getting by. And so show them what Bitcoin can do. Show them that this, by putting just a small amount away here, helps you get off the traditional tracks and just, it sets you up for future success. And make sure that they understand it's not going to be something that's going to take place over 6 months, but over 6 years, it can be life-changing, and it will be life-changing for many people. So that's going to be kind of the goal for the rest of the year. And the theme is just going out and just talking about the importance and putting in and showing Bitcoin in a way that's going to be impactful for the people around you in that way, how we can get off this hamster wheel. And so that's just kind of my morning rant right now. If anybody wants to add any comments to that or anything else, feel free to join in right now. Otherwise, we'll start covering some of the topics. I'm going to take that as a no. I hope everybody bought that nice little dip we had this morning. I think it wicked down all the way to like 93.5 Bitcoin. A lot of that had to do with what's going on in South Korea. The president just declared martial law. So some breaking news. This isn't the first time though. South Korea has declared martial law. I think they've done it a total of 16 times. But it is significant. So I guess just an hour ago or late night for them, and their current or local time, President Yoon declared martial law, citing a crisis caused by opposition parties. The president accused the Democratic Party, which holds a majority in parliament, of paralyzing governance by rejecting a national budget and attempting to impeach top prosecutors. He's quoted saying, "I declare martial law to protect the Free Republic of Korea from the threat of North Korean communist forces, to eradicate the despicable pro-North Korea anti-state forces that are plundering the freedom and happiness of our people, and to protect the free constitutional order." So after he declared this, South Korea's defense minister, Kim Jong-hyun, called emergency meetings with top commanders and ordered troops on high alert. And so they're just kind of, this is just unfolding as we loaded the show. So, Mike, I know this is kind of your wheelhouse. So I'm going to kind of throw it over to you and get your take on this stuff.
Well, the interesting thing that I was seeing from like, look, cause like, I don't know, like you already know more about like South Korea's politics than I do, Coleman, just from like what you shared. Cause I didn't know it was kind of like a, maybe not like a common event, but like it's taken place before. But what I think was a little bit interesting was like the stuff that I was just looking at, briefly this morning as like that news came in, was there's already suggestions of potential like coup activity. Now, like it's obviously way too early to even, I probably shouldn't even be saying that just because it's so early. It's only been like a couple, like an hour or two at most, but it does seem to be, I think it's interesting and it's just worthy of note considering it's in that immediate kind of like theater of like the whole Taiwan situation and everything else. So it's worth just noting and continuing to watch closely, like at least for the next couple weeks, couple months.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I know a whole lot. I had to do some digging onto what was going on there. But so this by itself is kind of a nothing burger. So this is my take. And again, I could be 100% wrong. I would have to default to someone like Randy K, for his insight on this. But for me, looking at this just by isolated situation, I think it's a nothing burger. However, when you start looking on with everything else that's kind of happened over the last, I would say 7 days or so, going all the way over to Biden approving the use of the long-range missiles, along with the UK and France granting permission, the German parliament kind of just falling apart and they're calling a snap election in the next couple of weeks. What's going on with France, how they're going to, their parliament is falling apart. They can't agree on any budgets. And that was, again, the same issue with going on with Germany. Just everything going on. And I think there's riots going on in Georgia right now and in Syria. There's been some big movements. And when you look at all of this kind of taking place, it starts to get the hairs on my neck standing up just a little bit because it seems a little bit too coordinated and there's just a little bit of too much going on with this same issue. And so I know in the DIB this morning, the Daily Intelligence Bulletin, we have it up in the nest. Randy Kelly had mentioned some modern monetary theory debauchery and just some of the fallacies that happened with it. And I think we're coming to the apex of this experiment. And I think it's coming to the top and we're starting to see everything just kind of crumble. And I don't think that the people that have created this and the people currently in power are wanting to go out quietly. And I think they're trying to drag everything down with them. So again, I just want to put on record, I could be 100% wrong with this theory. But for me, I think it deserves a little bit more attention, and just kind of watching everything going on. But Jordan, I saw you have your hand up.
Yeah, I think you're right as far as like the powers that be that are losing power aren't going to just go quietly and they're going to do what they need to do to try to maintain it. But I don't think there's any like coordinated thing or all these different events that are happening are necessarily connected. I mean, in the sense that they're connected, I think they're connected in a way where, like, we're living in a multipolar world now, and everybody, all these other countries are starting to realize, oh, the United States can't push people around like they have been doing for so long. And so everybody's kind of playing along the edges and pushing a little bit more, within their sphere of influence or just within their country. And I think we're just going to continue to see that. It doesn't, while it looks like chaotic and everything, and yeah, that kind of plays into the hands of those that the powers that be. I don't really think it's any like necessarily coordinated thing. I think we're going to just continue to see this as the globe kind of resets some of these like power structures and who can get away with what.
So maybe it's coordinated in the sense that it's just everything's just kind of falling apart at the same time. Everybody's kind of hitting the same hurdle with their fiduciary. I can't speak this morning. I apologize. I'm going to use really simple terms. I think just like everyone, their budgets just can't, they're not being able to balance anymore. They're just, and again, everyone is just maxed out. We've seen it, with consumers and citizens in this country where just prices are just continuing to get high. And I think you're just hitting just a climax at it where it's just really starting to fall apart. So maybe that's what I mean when it's coordinated, that it's just everything is just kind of falling apart in that way.
But again, well, and Coleman, to defend you a little bit, like this is a topic that I wrote on that got picked up by Zero Hedge, one of my most successful articles, because so many people thought I was an idiot because I was saying that I don't think that it is like necessarily a giant James Bond-esque kind of like Illuminati driven kind of like coordinated effort. But to defend yourself a little bit, like I think it can very easily look like there is a grand coordination scheme, because once these events, like once these cracks start getting kind of like more visible and more parties are aware of the situation, like Jordan's talking about, they're going to be rising up to take advantage of the situation to try and, like, you know, change their generational wealth situation, like a lot of us Bitcoiners are, especially with regards to like global trade and like territory and everything else. So just to defend you a little bit, like it does look like intelligence from the outside.
I just got done reading this book called The House of Medici, and just kind of like that Medici family in Florence, and how they basically, you know, Florence was a quote unquote republic, and the people there thought they were free, but it was really ruled by basically like their equivalent of corporations, with like the Medici family kind of at the top. And as I was like listening to that book, I was just realizing that's what we live in now. And maybe it's kind of what we always live in, where you just have these like different power centers, kind of as Mike talked about in that article he referenced. You have these power structures or power centers whose incentives often align. But you've always got people like vying for power. And when there's like a big, strong power, everything kind of seems stable. And then when that power starts to wane or collapses, you have this equilibrium shift where everything's trying to like balance out again. And I think it was interesting reading that, because it just made me realize like technology and stuff can change, but history and humans always kind of remain the same. We're just kind of living through the same period like that, which is a lot of what Mike writes about, is the second Renaissance.
Yeah, so we're living in perpetual circles, just with different technology.
Yeah, and don't you think
it's not a circle? It like it rotates, but we improve. If that makes sense.
I was just going to say technology speeds it up because of the information that's available.
Exactly. What you guys are describing is the circle that, like, you guys are actually all right technically. It looks like a circle from the like top down. If you're looking straight down onto onto a cone, it looks like a circle with the barrier. But when you're looking at what we're talking about is like technological, societal, spatial like advancement, right? It's really like what Jordan was saying, is more of a cone, because like you're starting out with a wider base, and then as things are improving, it's rising, but it's still following a very similar pattern. So it looks circular at the same time. So everybody's right.
I never tire of hearing that. We're all winners. Yeah, all winners. Never tire of hearing that. But no, yeah. So I do think it's interesting. And then, like you were saying, Bob, technology speeds this along. Again, if they can see the writing on the wall, which I think we can all see, that this failed experiment with just the fiat money printer is coming to an end. You try and button up all the exits, and that's exactly what's going on with France. Yesterday, they said that they're going to start taxing unrealized gains on Bitcoin. And again, their parliament is falling apart because they can't get their budget set, and they're literally collapsing, just like with Germany. And so they're just, again, just trying to hold on to it as best they can. And I know we've said this a lot recently, but it's that Sun Tzu quote, you know, an evil ruler will burn his country to the ground just so he can rule over the ashes. And I do think that's what you're seeing here. So it is unfortunate for the citizens of those countries. But again, that's why we Bitcoin, and that's why we need to stress the importance of it. You need Bitcoin right now when it's available. So when it becomes hard to acquire or you absolutely need it, you don't have to go and source for it. You have it and you can just pick up and you can go anywhere. So Bitcoin literally is the freedom technology. It allows you to go and do your own thing. You're not confined. You're not on any shackles, and you become your own sovereign individual. And so again, I think that's one of the biggest points we really need to start hitting when we talk about it. Cause again, we're on our own little bubble over here in America. We're isolated pretty much from everything else. We do have our own issues, but nothing like what's going on in Europe or the Middle East. So again, just kind of put, put them in their shoes, and it makes it a little easier sell. But if you guys could really quick, if you could just go to the top of this page and just go ahead and retweet this link. Let's get some more listeners in here. Again, I do think we have one of the best shows out there on X. So please just get this message out there. Spread the link to the space so we can get a couple more listeners joining us. And good morning, Lisa. I sent you an invite. So if you'd like to come up here and talk, always like to get your insight on things. But it wouldn't be a Bitcoin veteran space if we didn't talk about MicroStrategy. I just can't get over at what he's doing and the momentum that he's creating. So you could say that MicroStrategy with Saylor really kicked the ball off with these convertible notes and showing the success of them and showing that you don't need to offer interest on these bonds to go ahead and generate interest in it. So I think it was on Monday, yesterday, Mara came out and said that they wanted to raise $750 million with a $150 million option, doing 0% interest on their convertible bonds. And they're going to use those bonds to buy Bitcoin. Well, as of last night, before it was finalized, they increased it to $850. And then this morning, they sold $1 billion worth of these bonds. So again, it's just the amount of demand for this is just, it's incredible. And again, you have to, again, we have to bring it up. This is Saylor. He's shouting this playbook to the entire world. And honestly, it benefits him to do that. Because again, if he's the only one doing it, I think it makes it harder for him to reach his goal. But if he's able to get other countries on it, or not other countries, other companies on this, it just speeds up the whole timeline. So,
well, I mean, you could say other countries at this point, like with what he's working with and like the potential ramifications of it. So I don't think you're wrong there either, Coleman.
No, I don't think, but I don't think the countries are doing the debt offering like he is. But you're right. I do think that there's countries out there buying it. There's no way that they're not at this point. I think it's inevitable. And we had Dennis Porter on the show yesterday. And so if you missed it, it was a really good episode. And he talked a lot about his work with the Satoshi Action Fund and how he's helping create the strategic Bitcoin reserves. And when you listen to him, because regardless of how you feel about him, he's someone that's in the mix of it. He's right in the middle. And so he knows, he has a really good insight as to what's going on, whether you believe him or not. That's a different story. But I have no reason not to believe him. He's been pretty factual in a lot of his statements. Maybe a little overzealous, over the top, but he's still factual in what he's saying. And so when he hints that there's countries reaching out, that I do believe him. And then when you partner or when you pair that with David Bailey of Bitcoin Magazine, what he's been posting, it's very, very bullish. And so I think you're going to start seeing the price do some crazy things over the next 6 to 12 months. Don't get down about the price when we, like this morning, it dropped by about $1,500 and now we're right back up to 96K again. Don't worry about the short-term price action. This thing is going to take off. If I had to guess, I think you're going to sit right in this range till probably about the middle of December, and then it's just going to take off again. Remember, Bitcoin does things when everybody forgets about it. So if it sits here for another 10 days, people are going to come bored, and that's when it's just going to rip higher and just catch everybody by surprise.
A month ago, we were under 70, and now we're sad when it goes to 92, 93. I love Bitcoin. It's hilarious.
There's another thing I was going to add to the MicroStrategy topic. I've been hearing some friends of mine that are outside of the Bitcoin space talking about how he's essentially kind of like doing the whole George Soros thing and speculative attack on the dollar. While that might be true in some form or fashion, I think the most likely play, and like there's also some people trying to suggest that like Saylor's trying to prop up the entire Bitcoin market and like serve his own like investment, like, you know, process, which, you know, I think is personally ridiculous, because I think what he's doing is he's getting himself positioned in a position of heavy strength, essentially picking the highest ground in the area. If we're going to talk militarily, since we are Bitcoin veterans, essentially picking the best high ground defensible position before anybody else gets into the area, so that he can maintain that high ground and defend that position for a very long time going into the future before other serious players actually get involved. Because one thing that I've been watching closely, or I'm starting to watch closely, and I intend to watch closely going into the future, is be mindful of the Bitcoin companies and the companies outside the Bitcoin space that have like significant HODL stacks. And the one that I'm looking at is Mara. They have a pretty significant stack. I would suspect that companies like these are going to start copying the Sailor strategy and using, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Pullman, you might know this better than I do. I think Mara is already kind of starting to do this kind of play of like issuing their own notes so they can start buying more for their HODL stack, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and I don't mean to jump in, but they most certainly are. They're totally copying what MicroStrategy is doing, and I think they have the size to do it. So it's maybe not as big as MicroStrategy, but they have sizable positions. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much they're able to raise, if it's oversubscribed, like what MicroStrategy has been seeing in the capital markets. And I think it's interesting because obviously they're a mining company. So, you know, it's a little bit different dynamic than MicroStrategy, but it's, we'll see if other, obviously they're not able to acquire Bitcoin through mining fast enough, for their liking. So I think that's, definitely bullish, but also for Bitcoin, but also it'd be interesting to see if people kind of shift over, to Mara versus MicroStrategy.
Well, and to that point too, Bob, one thing that interests me, like thinking from the mining side, is that if Mara does this, which they are, and if Mara does this well, which I think they will, we could start seeing Bitcoin miners like Mara being capable of using their HODL stack to collateralize loans to get access to actual like direct power generation. And then they have the full production stack for Bitcoin mining, which gets really, really exciting really fast.
Yeah. So to answer your question, like Bob said, this is the second time they've done this in 2 weeks. And the first one was just over $600 million. So again, it's not small sums that they're doing. The only caveat I would say on this is that I think they're getting a lot of demand from foreign countries, and foreign companies, because they're not able to hold Bitcoin directly onto their balance sheets or have direct exposure to it. I think this play, again, only happens until there starts to become changes in that, and these companies are able to hold Bitcoin directly. Then I don't think that these bonds are as effective, and I don't think you see the demand. But until then, and again, governments take a long time to change laws. This is going to be the go-to play. But I can't take credit for that thought. I think that came from, Punter Jeff. I was listening to one of his spaces because he used to work with the insurance companies. And he said insurance companies specifically can't hold Bitcoin on their balance sheet. So they're looking for these options, as a kind of like a proxy way to do it.
I think the interesting thing too will be like, do people analyze this from the standpoint of Bitcoin per share? As Mara starts to wind up these convertible notes, are they as attractive?
Are they using that metric, Bob? Do you know? Like, I know that's Sailor's metric right now, Bitcoin per share, but I think, Metaplanet's doing the same thing, but I haven't heard Mara doing that.
In order to compete, I think that's where they're going to have to go, especially if there's still a market for it with MicroStrategy continuing to issue the convertible debt.
I would think that'd be really smart for Mara to do, because just based off unit bias alone, the comparison for sats per share price Mara looks aggressively attractive after they start doing that, in my opinion.
Before I look for it, does anybody know off the top of their head how much Bitcoin Mara has now?
Last I saw was like 30,000, I think, in their HODL stack.
So with this billion, and I think they're using it all for acquiring Bitcoin. I don't think they're using it to pay off any previous debt or expand their facilities. So that gets them a little over 1,000 Bitcoin, maybe 1,005. So, yeah, that's not going to be – or, yeah, no, 1,000. No, that – I can't, I'm so sorry guys. My brain is not functioning this morning. Someone tell me how much $1 billion of Bitcoin is at today's value.
It's a metric shit ton is really the official number.
There's Lisa.
Thank you for coming and saving me, Lisa.
Oh, you're welcome. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. It's actually 6:30 at night here in Kenya, just where I am today.
Dang. Are you over there with Ella? What are you guys doing over there?
She is on her way. I came earlier. The Africa Bitcoin Conference starts 5 or 6 days, I think. But I had to allow myself. I wanted to see the area and get over my jet lag, which is really a thing when you come this far. 2 8.5-hour flights to get here. But anyway. Happy Bitcoin. Coleman, I mean, just this conversation is really interesting because, and I love like all the analysis on Bitcoin per share and like, it doesn't matter, right? Like, they're doing this because it is the strongest asset to hold. And it, in my opinion, it's not any different than if, Mark Benioff at Salesforce, if someone gave him a 0% loan so that he could go out and buy every Picasso, right? There wouldn't be any discussion. It would just be like, wow, he owns all these Picassos. Yet people are doing it to buy Bitcoin and all of a sudden it's this, ooh, I'm not quite sure if this is safe, stable, reliable, whatever, store of value. Like, of course it is. That's why they're doing it. Of course it is. That's why Russia just stood up $1 billion or whatever of mining assets. Like I just don't understand. And I don't think that the train stops anytime soon. You know, it's like, well, will it stop when people figure it out and it's widely adopted? Sure. But I would never trade against, what's happening in this market now. And I think the other mining companies, if you're a public miner and you're not doing this, why would you not be doing this? Right. If you're any public company and you have access to the capital markets, why would you not be doing this? It's really just, I don't know. I don't even know. Like, is it an intelligence test? It's really just like how safe do I want to keep my family is really the question what the answer is. I think it solves for is like Fred is looking after his team and he's looking after that company. He's looking after his shareholders. That's what every other company should be doing. They just don't know it yet.
They're going to keep getting as much Bitcoin as they can while still spreading FUD about Bitcoin. So it makes it easier for them to get it. When I say they, I don't mean like Mara or Sailor. I mean like these big institutions and governments and stuff. They don't want to start telling everybody that this is the best asset ever. Like, we're going to say that, but they don't want to say it. If they think it is, they don't want other people going and getting it.
Go ahead, Lisa.
I don't know. Yeah, it's just amazing to me that there's been so much conversation about MicroStrategy all over Twitter, all over the news, people just continuing to question this strategy. It's disappointing, though, frankly, to me that we're having this conversation in the United States of America with the strongest capital markets in the world. Like, let's just go forward. I mean, Mike, or whoever, Coleman, whoever made the top of the hill analogy, that's exactly what that is demonstrating, right? And yet we still have people within office in our country who just are fighting this. Why? To protect Jamie Dimon. Like, gosh, I almost forgot his name. Thank God. You know, why are we still protecting him? What an awful human being. What, I mean, I qualify that solely because of the things that he said about Bitcoin. I mean, that is just Neil Kashkari at the Fed. Fucking bold-faced lies out of both of those men. It's shameful.
No. And so because you're in the Bitcoin MENA conference, Lisa, I saw that Eric Trump is going to be speaking there and doing a keynote presentation. So I think with that, we'll get better insight. Well, hopefully we'll get a little foreshadowing as to what the Trump administration really feels about Bitcoin. And maybe a little bit more clarification on some of the policies they want to implement. But for those who didn't know, Eric Trump will be at Bitcoin MENA this week. So I do think that that will be significant, and I do think it'll be something to go back and listen to for those who miss it, just because there will be some talking points or some hints foreshadowing as to what his father's going to try and implement. And so we'll find out pretty quick. But again, Lisa, like you're right. I just don't think a lot of the companies just have the guts to do it. And they just want to sit on the sideline and they're just in disbelief and they're just waiting for it to go back to zero, because it's, again, it's the tulip mania. It's bound to crash again. Nothing goes up like this. And it's just, there's no reason. But when you look, BlackRock has 500,000 Bitcoin in their ETF, like 500,000. Saylor has 400,000. Like, and we're not even talking nation states yet acquiring this. You know, you're going to get, Mara is going to start doing this playbook, and they're going to be able to generate a lot of Bitcoin in the coming weeks.
And look, I mean, Fred has been on this since the Bitcoin conference in July. You can look back to that conference. It was either Wednesday or Thursday, or maybe it was Friday of that week. They announced that they did this for the first time. I think, if I'm correct, but it is just the way. And frankly, if you are a public company CEO and not putting Bitcoin on your balance sheet, I'm really not sure you should be a public company CEO anymore, right? Bitcoin is not going to zero. It's not anymore. Maybe it was potentially going to zero 5-0 today. I mean, it's...
Yeah, you're cutting in and out of there a little bit for me, Lisa, but I think like what you said, yeah, it's not going to zero, and Bitcoin at $95,000 today, $96,000 is a safer bet than Bitcoin was at $16,000 4 years ago. So everyone gets in at the comfort level that they seem best. And so unfortunately though, for most people who need it most, and I'm not talking about corporations, I'm just talking about like just citizens, they are unfortunately going to have to pay a lot higher price. But really quick, I just want to give a quick thank you to our partners, if I can say their names. Black Sheep Ammo, restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Punch Plate, I see you guys in the audience. Everyone throw up a fist pump for Punch Plate. Stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Don't leave that thing on paper. Go check them out at punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. And Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Use the code BTCVETS with an S for 5% off your order. And if you pay in Bitcoin, you get an additional 10% off. So potential for 15% off your total order if you use that code and pay in Bitcoin. And last but not least, Bitcoin Alaska. I was just hammering out the last of the details for my family last night with my wife. I am looking forward to this conference. It's going to be July 5th and 6th in Juneau. It's going to be amazing. Alaska is gorgeous in the summer. I've never been to Juneau, but everyone who has that I've talked to says it's just absolutely amazing. This is a family-friendly conference. So bring your wife, bring your husband, bring your kids, make a vacation out of it. It is going to be amazing. Make sure you purchase a whale pass. this will be the only whale pass where if you purchase, you will see whales out there. So we're going to do a private cruise out to Tracy Arm Fjord, and it'll be about 8 hours. It is family friendly, so you can bring your wife, husband, kids. It'll just be Bitcoiners on a boat talking about Bitcoin, looking at the beautiful scenery, watching the sea life. So go check them out at bitcoinalaska.org. So let's keep rolling on through here. I actually wanted to follow back up with this. So during Dennis Porter's talk yesterday, he had mentioned that he said that there was one state in the United States that hasn't come out yet that said that they were going to create a strategic Bitcoin reserve. But when they do, he predicts that they're going to be the first one to actually get it accomplished and start acquiring it. So I was just kind of going through and following up with him, and I found out that he's talking with Senator Lummis from Wyoming tomorrow on a live space. And if I had to put money on it, I would bet money that they're probably going to announce a strategic Bitcoin reserve in Wyoming. If you didn't know, Senator Lummis proposed the strategic Bitcoin reserve for the United States after or during the Bitcoin conference in Nashville this year. So it only makes sense that she would try to do something like that for her home state. And so if I was going to bet, they're going to announce that Wyoming is going to create a strategic Bitcoin reserve and that it's going to pass within the coming weeks. That's just my take on it. If anyone has any other thoughts, let's hear them.
I don't know what other thoughts you could honestly have. Like, Wyoming has been leading the charge in a lot of different respects for the Bitcoin stuff. I mean, they've got Cynthia Lummis, like you're talking about, and Caitlin Long. Like, and Lisa was working for Custodia for a while. So, like, I don't understand how any, like, the only other state that could be moving faster, in my opinion, would have been Texas, and they're clearly not. So I agree with you, Coleman. I think it's going to be Wyoming.
So breaking news, you heard it here first. Wyoming's supposedly going to do it. If we're wrong, I apologize. I was fed false information.
No, you don't apologize. We don't apologize for running off of the best information we've got.
I still want to be held accountable for spouting false information. But no, so that's going to be a good one. It's tomorrow at 3 p.m. It'll be live streamed on X. So definitely I would tune into that. And so, yeah, I think it's going to be a good speech, and they're going to cover a lot. So kind of moving through some of the things that happened last week that we didn't get a chance to cover, and this is a big one, the Tornado Cash case. So appeals court, treasury, an appeals court says that the treasury overstepped its authority in sanctions on Tornado Cash, and Tornado Cash has had a major legal victory after they called the United States to drop the sanctions against the crypto anonymizing tool, adding that the U.S. Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Asset Control committed an overreach of authority in the case. So that's a big win for us. It's a big win for them. It's unfortunate that it had to go through all this proceedings to get here to this point, because we all kind of knew it was overreaching. But nonetheless, it's a nice little victory for us to hold on to. So if you all have any comments or thoughts on that, please share.
I'm hoping that it gets to the point of where, Samurai can also get involved in like the general, like kind of like mixing industry, gets a break. Cause I think the fact that like they're trying to say that transaction anonymizing is illegal or somehow inherently criminal. Yet we use VPNs for our like access to internet and like online activity and everything, and nothing's wrong with that. Like I don't understand the difference. It, like, if you're anonymizing your financial activity, I think that should be a right to be able to defend your privacy.
Yeah, Coleman, if I can just suggest to, Natalie Smolinski posted about the Bank Secrecy Act, I don't know, in the last couple of days, she would be amazing to have on this space, to talk about the Bank Secrecy Act, just sort of in this vein.
Do you have a close connection with her, Lisa?
I do, Coleman.
I was going to say, we've also had her on the podcast. We could, like, Lisa, by all means, if you want to, like, bring it up to her, you can, but we could also reach out to Natalie ourselves as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Mike. Yeah, reach out.
Yeah, if y'all could, I'd really enjoy talking with her. So if you could just send her and then just tag me on there, tag me or the Bitcoin Veterans handle. I'd like to set that up.
I just wanted to let you know, I'll write up the tweet now and then I'll send it to you in a DM.
Thank you, sir. I try and reach out to a lot of people. I just don't have a lot of traction with it. And so, if we have any special connections, I'll definitely utilize those. So thank you, Lisa and Mike. But I want to welcome Steel Valley, to the stage. Good morning.
Hey, what's up? Good morning. Yeah, no, just a new meetup group, in the northern West Virginia panhandle. So near Pittsburgh and Steubenville, Ohio. But, what I want to say about what you're talking about, the Tornado Cash case. Yeah, no, it's great, but it's like, it's users of Tornado Cash, you know, obviously that had brought that lawsuit. And, you know, like, yeah, turned out with a victory with it. But, well, they didn't turn out with a victory with it. It's going to go back down, you know, I guess to the district court that had ruled against them. And we'll see where it goes from there. But the bigger factor is, will that ruling at all impact the, what's the guy that's in the Dutch? I think Alexi is one of the developers. His case, like he's appealing his case over in the Netherlands and he's still in pre-trial detention, you know, for being a developer of, Tornado Cash. And then you also have Roman, you know, who is, his trial is still ongoing. It's been delayed. It's supposed to have a court hearing or trial start, this month, but it's been delayed to, you know, 2025. So again, like, and that's, that case is happening in New York. So you still have that issue. And then we already know about the Samurai Wallet guys where their case, you know, is still pending. And I think that might be in New York as well. So yeah, it's certainly a victory, you know, for users. And when you read that complaint, I'm like, who the hell wrote this? Because they break down, you know, just, Ethereum really well. They break down self-custody and what the controls are. It's just very well written. And I no judge wrote that. And I'm like, who is that law clerk? Like who helped, like who's understanding the technology, to the bare bones and the way that the complaint said. So I thought that was interesting.
Steele, yeah. So you read it. A question for you. Did you see any reference in there? I've been meaning to read it. I just haven't had a chance. Did you see any reference in there to the Chevron deference decision?
What's the Chevron deference decision?
So not to get like too into the legal stuff, but it was something that I think happened in October. The Supreme Court overthrew this long-standing principle where if Congress doesn't pass a law in particular, they've handed off to regulators that are, you know, experts, quote unquote experts in the area to kind of make rules and regulations related to, you know, any type of different industry. And so this, you know, long and short of it is, overturning this makes it so that it's going to force Congress to enact laws rather than have it just pushed off to these quote unquote expert regulators to just do whatever they want.
That's a wild idea.
Yeah, I don't recall that being mentioned. It might have been, but with this one, it was more so like, so the users, I mean, and there are a bunch of like Ethereum, I don't know, like dev people. When you go and look at their profiles, because they all have the ones that filed this lawsuit, that filed this lawsuit. They're calling it a Tornado Cash case, but it's not a Tornado Cash case. It's a bunch of users of Tornado Cash who are, again, ETH devs who use Tornado Cash, who are suing the U.S. government for the U.S. Treasury Department for sanctioning the Tornado Cash. So it goes more to like the privacy, you know, like end. But in that, what they came away and said, and I will say, I feel like I'm going to hurt myself in saying this, that I am a lawyer. So that's why I'm speaking, you know, on this. And I did look up the Chevron and I do remember that. But no, with this one, it was more of, the Biden administration had a law, had put out a law and I'm not reading anything. So it's coming off the cuff. So I would say, please Google this, but they released a law that kind of gave them broad powers and where they could, and those broad powers would extend, you know, to your executive branch that would allow, the Department of Treasury and OFAC that's under the Department of Treasury to do what they did with Tornado Cash as far as, hey, we're going to sanction this. We're going to say that, you know, that this is, you know, that they're doing these things. And so that's what it more so talked to. It was more saying that the judge, the ruling says Congress didn't intend, like this was the intent of, you know, the president's, you know, like power, the executive branch's power being this expanded. This isn't what Congress intended. And so we do think it's overreaching, but Congress still needs to pass something, you know, like in relation to this, you know, so it was more so on that, but I don't remember it specifically mentioning the Chevron, but I don't see maybe why it wouldn't from what the Chevron, case or decision was on.
Yeah. And I think if you look at Samurai is really, an overreach by FinCEN trying to, look at what they were doing and say that it was, that they were responsible for money laundering, when they weren't even in custody of the funds. They just wrote a protocol that allowed people to come together and mix their Bitcoin UTXOs. And
yeah. And so just to piggyback on that.
It's similar. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but just to piggyback on that, that's what I think could potentially help Samurai as well as Roman. So Samurai in their New York case, and then Roman, the other, Tornado Cash dev whose case is also in New York. I think that this ruling in Texas, this federal ruling would help their cases because both of their cases are on, you know, control. And it's, and when you read like, well, you controlled it. And they're like, well, no, we didn't. And so again, whoever the heck, law clerk, whoever they got to help to write the opinion, cause it just really breaks down again, just the differences and, you know, of, you know, self-custody versus the type of, I can't remember the name of it, but the type of, code that was released by Tornado Cash. Like they had at some point they were able to control it and then they did an update on the code to where they could not, you know, couldn't control. And so it gives you a very elementary explanation with charts and everything, on it, which was, I don't know, again, fantastic. There's no way a judge, an old ass judge did that. There's no way a law clerk, I just do not think that they understood it on that level. It would shock me on their own. But with the Dutch case, which has to do with Alexei, again, the other, I guess, I don't know, the co-developer or whatever of Tornado Cash. With that one, the Dutch like court found him guilty, you know, of the money laundering, but they came back and said, because you didn't put in, like you should have expected or you should have foreseen that this would be a result of what you created. And because you didn't put in any mitigating, you know, like measures or mechanisms to prevent it, then, you know, this is why you're guilty. I mean, he's still like, he's appealing that now, over in the Netherlands, but that was the reasoning there, which I'm gonna say as a lawyer, I understand how they came with that. Cause I don't know, like I used to work at a crypto exchange. I used to work at Bittrex in the compliance investigations. And so I've seen how people move through mixers. I've seen the dark side, whatever that means, you know, like the illegal side. It's not as, obviously it's not as much as the media, you know, whatever, what have you believed, but like it does exist. It is there. It's been around for a while, you know, since like 2017. But yeah, so I thought that I don't hate what they said. If you can foresee it, then I don't know, say something, put a disclaimer, you know, put a warning, like don't do this. We don't promote this, but I know you want it to be decentralized and want to give people autonomy and, you know, allow them to do whatever. So I think that's the gray, I don't know, somewhat of the gray area. So
yeah. And so I want to just say, like, I think that it's really a great thing for, you know, Samurai and anyone else facing, these types of attacks, but at the same time, we see other strange things going on, maybe as a last hurrah for the Biden administration, not saying for sure, but I think, you know, we can also look at the news yesterday. I think it was, with the state of Delaware, there was a court ruling to basically tell the board of Tesla that Elon Musk can't have the compensation package that they were giving him. So there's like so much, like, different courts do different things. And so while, you know, this is a positive thing with Tornado Cash, I'm not sure how much it directly translates to the Southern District of New York where Samurai is, or, you know, even out of the country, with, the Netherlands and what they're doing over there.
Yeah. It won't help in the Netherlands at all. It should not, but for the, I mean, because it's federal, you know, it still does hold some weight. I mean, obviously Supreme Court's going to hold the greatest weight, but it will, like, I would be shocked if, both the attorney teams for Roman and then Samurai don't, you know, mention this one. And obviously, I mean, what you said with the whole Biden administration thing, I mean, the last hurrah would be for them to, or for him to hurry up and, which I think he's probably already done, is approving a bunch of Democratic leaning federal judges. But remember, judges are supposed to be, they're not supposed to have a party, but, again, like that's within their like code, you know, like they're not, they have a judicial, you know, like, what is it? I don't know, code of honor. It's not what's called, but they do have standards that they're supposed to abide by. But yeah, that's going to be his last hurrah.
Supposed to be impartial. Exactly. And you can see that that's what happened with Tesla and Elon Musk with a judge from Delaware. It was a shareholder only holding 6 shares was able to bring this lawsuit against and prevent him to get his payout, which he should be able to do, just get an owner distribution. So it's crazy. And that's kind of a crazy case. I don't want to start getting into that because there's not enough time to cover it. But there's a lot of overreach and overstep. But again, I agree with Mark Moss on this. I do think there's a pendulum that swings, and it was swinging really, really, really far left. And I think it's pretty evident now that pendulum is starting to come back to the right, and hopefully it stays more towards the middle center. We don't want to overcorrect too far to the right. Again, nothing is – the extreme of either side is not going to be beneficial, but just sitting in the middle is going to be the best. But I want to welcome 23 Skidoo to the stage. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. You surprised me. I'm just on here listening, but what you got?
You tell me. You requested to come up here, so yeah. I figured you had something.
No,
you
had. I was just I was just prompting my mic off in case somewhere along the way I wanted to comment on something and be ready for it. So didn't have my hand up, just preparing myself. But yeah, thank you very much. Just here listening and to someone's, maybe your comment earlier when you said, too bad those who, need Bitcoin the most are not as active getting into it. Well, I probably fall under one of those categories as I've been a blue collar carpenter and welder my whole life. And I got in kind of early and, I'm fucking proud of myself for being that person early. And, despite the wave and everybody saying I'm crazy, here we are, right? So, yeah, man, good to be here on the show. I'll just be here listening.
Well, thank you. And thank you for joining. And I like hearing stories like that where you know, HODL, American HODL made a post yesterday where everyone's just going to say that we are lucky with everything that we do. And they don't look at everything that happened, all the doubt, all the hate, all the fear. And everyone's just going to chop it up to you're lucky. 23 Skidoo, you still have your mic on though. Just go ahead and mute it for me. We just get a lot of.
Yep.
All right. Perfect. Yeah. We just get a lot of background noise with that.
Coleman, do you really think though that like, I mean, maybe right now where Bitcoin sits, you know, looks really good if you've been in it for a while. But I think all of us have this expectation that this continues to run. And I'm not just saying this next year. I'm saying into the distant future. And so the real question will be like, is it really luck or is it more open-mindedness, continual learning, and this ability to basically see something that people have been saying for decades, you know, hey, we have this enormous debt and it's becoming dangerous and it's just getting worse and worse. And to say, hey, there's finally a solution, something that's better than gold, physical gold. And there's finally this solution and it's a way to opt out. And then there's all these other things that come after that, right? But I guess my question is like, if you really zoom out, can the argument really be made by an outsider or someone who hasn't gotten started yet and say, well, it was just pure luck? I think that's a fiat mindset. I think that's someone coming in saying, well, I need to somehow make up for lost time and I'm going to invest in all these altcoins because they're going to give me a better chance. So I'm not saying I push back. I do think people will say it's luck, but I think us, you know, people who have been in it, even for a few months or years, could help give perspective to those people and say, you know, hey, you may call it luck, but it's really this, you know, again, open-mindedness, it's this seeing a solution to a problem and just being aware of the problem. So maybe others have thoughts on that, but.
So Bob, I agree. I wouldn't call us lucky. I would never call another Bitcoin lucky. I know the hard work, the dedication, the amount of hours that you have to put into this to fully understand it. It is consuming. And if you don't put in that proof of work, You sold this morning when the price touched down to 9,400 or 94,000. I guarantee you would have sold because you don't have that conviction and you're terrified. So I would never say that we ourselves are lucky. I know what it takes. I will though say that everybody sitting on the sidelines right now, when they get into it eventually, they will still describe us as just being very lucky. And the reason I say that, I think getting into Bitcoin is a lot like starting your own business. And if you all have ever started your own business, the amount of work, the amount of sacrifices that go into it, you can't describe it like anything else. Unless you've ever done it before, you have no appreciation for what goes into it. And I started my business 7 years ago. And I created it in a way where I could create time for myself, where I could go ahead and eventually step back, have people run my business and just kind of watch on the sidelines and make sure everything is operating smoothly. And because of that, I'm allocated a lot of free time. I'm able to dictate my own schedule. I'm able to do things. I'm able to take vacations and trips with my family because that's what I want. My kids are young. I'd rather have all that time right now with my kids, having one-on-one interactions with them than being in my 50s, finally be able to have that time. Because at that point, my kids are going to have their own kids. They're going to have their own lives and I'm going to miss out on a huge part. So I put in a lot of time and effort during that. And I still get called really lucky with my work schedule right now, even though people, they didn't see the sacrifices I had to make. I'll go into a real personal story here. We had our own house. We bought a business and we are literally like just living at the business. We had to open, we had to close. So we were basically just paying our mortgage just to go sleep at night. So my wife and I made a sacrifice. We sold our house and moved directly right next to our business. And so for a year and a half with our kids being 3 and 5, We lived right next to our business. And it was a huge sacrifice. There was nothing easy about that. It caused a lot of stress. It caused a lot of heartaches during the time. But looking back at it now, man, there was nothing I would change about that. And it put us in this position. Now we're able to do what we want to. And I think that's what Bitcoin is like. When you first get in, you have people telling you you're going to fail. It's going to go to zero, but you just keep pushing through. You put off vacations. You put off, you know, luxuries that you don't necessarily need because you know what the outcome's going to be in a few years out. And so again, I still think people are going to call us lucky because they didn't do that. They haven't made their sacrifices and they just don't have that foresight to see what people gave up to do it.
Yeah, I just wanted to piggyback off of that. And kind of follow up on 23 Skidoo and say, yeah, no, like I got into Bitcoin, gosh, man, back in 2022, right when that, the news broke with FTX, you know, that November, I don't know, something 17th, whatever it was, when it went down to 16, 17,000. And that's when I bought in, and just kept investing in it. Before that I was in ETH. I was heavy into ETH because I was on the NFT side. When people say that what I want to say is, and so this year when it has written up, gone up to what it has, I did sell, 80% of it and I bought a house. And so that's what brought me to middle of nowhere, still, West Virginia, because it was cheap to buy a house up here. And I can literally say, you know, I cashed out the Bitcoin and bought it. And I'm happy for that. And the rest of it is still doing really well with, you know, the run up that we've had, over the past month. But, to anyone that says, I mean, I tell people this all the time. I'm like, why are you not paying attention to what's going on, you know, like in the news? Are you not paying attention to what's happening globally? I mean, yeah, we may not be for, you know, CBDCs, but practically over 100 countries for the past, at least 4 years, you know, have been testing and trialing and talking about, you know, central bank digital currency. You've had JP Morgan, you know, talking about like their Onyx blockchain, you know, like, so there's been so much. You've had, you know, obviously Michael Saylor or MicroStrategy, maybe since 21, and I'm not sure when he started, you know, buying Bitcoin. You've had the news with El Salvador. Like, I don't know. It's just been everywhere and no one. And for the people that haven't wanted to pay attention to just dive into what is this new technology? What is this thing? You know, that unfortunately the loss is on them, but hopefully now they are looking. I mean, I'm telling people now in this new town that I live in, I'm like, look, y'all got the infrastructure and you got cheap energy. Y'all need to get some Bitcoin mining going. But aside from that, you know, it's just, like, look at what's happening on Wall Street. You're not having, you know, Goldman Sachs and all these, you know, like traditional finance, you know, like conglomerates entering this market. You're not having different countries talk about this and the talk of strategic reserve. It's not coming out of nowhere. It's been brewing for a while. It's just, yeah, it's kind of hit, it's not hit its peak, but it's risen to the surface a little bit more. But yeah, it's certainly not luck.
I'll jump in if I can.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. As to luck, you know, Coleman, you said before, you know, the conviction it takes. It's not luck, it's inquisitiveness. It's inquisitiveness. It's open-mindedness, as you said, Coleman. I got into it early because it fascinated me as kind of like anarchist funny money, listening to it. And I can't even recall when I first started paying attention, not learning. I wouldn't say learning, but paying attention to media stories, but maybe 11, maybe 10, I was hearing stuff and it was piquing my interest. And I'm not a tech person. I just meant again, like as anarchist funny money. And then in 14, I bought a little bit. 15, I went to a festival, an ANCAP festival in New Hampshire, Pork Fest. And I actually brought my anvil and forge, and I forged metal, and people paid me in Bitcoin. And I earned an entire Bitcoin then. And because I didn't understand it, because there wasn't a lot of, like, podcasts and whatnot to learn from, in the 17-18 height, I sold out, which was amazing. And now I live mortgage free. But then in 20, when COVID hit, I was like, man, let's check out and see what's happening in the Bitcoin world. And now all the podcasts existed, all the interviews, all the books. And man, I just needed like 3 hours of information that I didn't have from earlier. And I was 100% convinced, like laughing, rolling around, like at the beauty of it all. And I just started piling in with every penny I could earn building and welding. And 2020 to now, I'm sitting where I want. It's frankly, it's my retirement. That's all I got. So yeah, so it's conviction, man. And I don't understand the mystery about why it speaks to some people. I mean, it's my worldview. I always knew the world was a house of cards. I knew the economic structure was a house of cards. I knew the food system was a house of cards. I've been wired towards homesteading and towards self-sufficiency and self-reliance. So Bitcoin just, it just glommed on to me like a beast. Yeah, took no effort. And I'm so thankful for it. But yeah, it's conviction, because I bought all the way up from 2020. And that's hard money to come by when you're earning it every day and then going home and buying. And then it hit the peak and it dropped down. And as it was dropping, I was buying the whole time, because that's how convinced I was. It was nothing but an opportunity.
So this is just kind of how humans work, is the majority of people are just kind of living their lives, like doing what they need to do to get by. You've got a smaller group of people who identify that there's problems with the system and society in whatever. And you've got a smaller group of people that identify the problem and look for solutions. And people come up with all sorts of different solutions that they think will work. And, you know, that's whatever. That's part of the free market working, free market of ideas. But the thing that humans do is once something actually gets solidified as like a common, yeah, this is common knowledge, like whether that was fire or the printing press or gunpowder or whatever, everyone just, or like laws of physics, right? Everyone just then assumes like, oh yeah, that's obvious. We all knew that. But it's not until that has like made its way into society and everybody knows and understands how it works that everyone just thinks that it's like we all take credit for every discovery that's ever been discovered throughout all of human civilization. And so we all just kind of now take for granted and take credit for that being common knowledge. I told Mike and Shane this a while back, so he's already heard it, but there was, I forget his name, but the guy that built the dome for the, cathedral in Florence, the city council wanted him to come and like build it. Like he was supposed to be like the best architect to do it, but he wouldn't tell them how he was going to do it. And so they were like, no, we're not going to go with you. But then eventually they realized, well, they kind of had to, but they wanted to get the information out of him. He's like, I'm not going to tell you how to do it, because then you'll just get somebody else to do it. He was like, I tell you what, I'll do it if you can stand an egg up on one of its ends, you can do it. So they all tried it. None of them could do it. And so then he goes up and he takes the egg and he cracks the tip of it and stands it up. And they say, well, we all could have done that. And he was like, yeah, if I had told you how to do it, then you would have done it and you wouldn't have needed me. And so that's just kind of like how humans work. Once somebody does it, we all see it. Oh yeah, that makes sense. Like we could all just do that. And so then they think that you just got lucky because, well, I could have figured that out too if you had just told me, but you didn't do the work. Like we're all here because we all did the work to figure out the solution to a problem. And that goes for like everything in human civilization. This will just be the next one eventually.
There's nothing lucky about it. You look at any technology and how people don't, may or may not believe in whatever the tech is. A lot of people just run out and they'll buy a stock of a company that they don't know what it does or whatever the shit coin of the week is, and they have no clue what it is, and they're buying it, and you ask them, what is it? But they don't know. But since they don't know what the value of that particular thing is. Like Bitcoin is a payment network that, you know, far better than PayPal. It's a store of value, better than gold. It's got all of these different values that that people don't understand. And then you look at, like, it, we put forth the effort. We don't only put forth the effort to understand the asset, but we put in the work to build out the use cases for that asset. So it's not like we're just buying Microsoft stock to get rich. We're buying Bitcoin, having conferences, going to conferences, having meetups, getting vendors to accept Bitcoin, all the way up to Michael Saylor and figuring out how to create basically a money printer. So it's I find it offensive when people say it's luck, because they're not, A, they don't understand it, B, they're not putting forth the work, and C, they're not building out the use cases. Sure, an airplane can fly, and when we invented the airplane, you know, what was the use case? People may not have understood the use case right up until someone went, oh, I can get this box from A to B on this plane cheaper and faster. And that's what Bitcoin does. It's cheaper and faster. So I just find it offensive that people say it's luck, and would definitely go out of my way to correct them and let them know that maybe they should put forth the time and the effort to understand and build out the asset that they believe in. And why do we believe in it? Because it's freedom tech. So, yeah, that's my take.
I think people just have farmed out so much of their lives. And so it's just personal responsibility. And it's a lack thereof for the people who are going to call all of us lucky. And it's unfortunate, but it happens in all these areas, right? It's, you know, food. It's, I mean, you could go on and on about all the different areas where people have just farmed out these things. So everybody's a specialist in their area, and it allows them to have, you know, high enough wages where they can basically, not have any responsibility in these other areas of their lives. And this is just one of them. So I think it's a symptom, and it's why, you know, a lot of us joke around about, you know, getting healthy and having, you know, sun and, eating only beef and all of those things. They're all good things. But it's because Bitcoin kind of awakens you to these other areas where you've farmed out so much of your life, and it's time to take more personal responsibility.
The truly successful people throughout history, like mastered a bunch of different skills or just understood a bunch of different things. And we've gotten to your point, we've gotten to a place where everyone specializes in just one thing, and which is fine, like to a degree, but nobody sees like the bigger picture and how all these other things connect. And going back to Mike and his talking about the second Renaissance, like the first Renaissance came about because you had these people that were very gifted in a lot of different areas and started connecting all these different dots of how things are interconnected. And I think we're kind of getting back to that. Like the really successful people moving forward are going to be the ones that can collect and connect all these dots, as Lisa says.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I still think they're going to call us lucky because they've put no effort into it. And so that's just how I feel on that. But really, I think they'll be the lucky ones because they've put no energy into it, no time, no resources, and they just buy it on a whim and they get to ride the coattails.
You absolutely right there. I got a friend who, over the past 2 years up until early this spring, when I would try to orange pill him, as I did many people, and almost zero people did I ever succeed in really getting to do it. All he ever said was, tell me where to buy it and what to do with it. And I just said, no, I'm not doing that. Like, you got to put in some time. You got to put in some effort for one, your own security, your own understanding. But it's just not, it's not the kind of thing. It's sorry about that. I had a phone call. So it's not okay. And so I refused him. In the end, someone else did that for him. And, he's lucky because he knows nothing about it, and he bought it at 35. He bought half a Bitcoin at 35 and he's like, wow, this is amazing. So I somewhat am like frustrated. I'm happy for him in some ways because he's a blue collar guy, but somewhat frustrated that he doesn't know shit about it. Never taken any time to learn anything about it. And like you said, the people coming along here, once all the technologies are in place and everything's simple, they're going to be the lucky ones.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's giving a man a fish versus teaching a man to fish.
Exactly.
So I'm going to go ahead and start wrapping up the show right here, guys. We went a little over, but I do appreciate everyone who tuned in, everyone who listened, everyone who contributed, 23 Skidoo, Steel Valley. I really appreciate you both jumping up here. Obviously, Wade, Jordan, Bob Van Kirk, Mike, and Lisa for joining as well. Just one other thing I just want to hit before everyone starts leaving the space. Remember your OPSEC. Be very mindful, even on this space here, mentioning dollar amounts you bought Bitcoin at or how much you bought or how much you've sold. Never say that. Always just be very vague with it. And then just always, if anyone ever asks you, your default response should be, I don't have enough. So just make sure, again, as the price starts to rip, you're going to start making yourself an unnecessary target. So just never dox that information, not even, especially to strangers on the internet. But just, you don't want to make life more difficult than what it can be. So just a kind of a general rule of thumb. But again, I want to thank everybody who tuned in. It was a great show. I really enjoyed this conversation. We're doing this again tomorrow at 10 a.m. So make sure you tune in. Bring a friend. Bring a guest, retweet the space. Let's get some more listeners in here because I do think we have one of the best spaces with the best contact out there, hands down. So go out there, have fun, and just don't shitcoin. It's like baking a cake with expired ingredients.